Hello, and a very warm welcome to the Studio Canal Presents podcast. My name is Simon Brew from Film Stories magazine, and this is a regular podcast celebrating one of the biggest and deepest film libraries in the world. Studio Canal's extensive library of over 6,000 films brings together cinema from around the globe. Amongst the choices? Well, it's Oscar winners such as The Deer Hunter and Leaving Las Vegas. Sci-fi favourites such as The City of the Lost Children and Daleks Invasion Earth 2150 AD. And hugely acclaimed treats such as Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy and The Kings of Summer. We're doing our very best to explore it all in this podcast. In this episode, we're focusing on a brand new comedy. Wicked Little Letters pairs Olivia Colman and Jesse Buckley on screen together for the first time. It's a very sweary, very funny film. And in a moment, I'm going to be talking to its director, Thea Sharon. Before that, though, here's a little taster of the film itself.
The Home Secretary, Mr. Edward Short, was compelled to answer a question in Parliament about the ever-growing scandal of the Littlehampton letters. The poison pen missives, obscene and malicious in equal measure, are causing widespread distress across the county. Now numbering over 100, Mr. Short called them a national embarrassment, but said he has immeasurable faith in his exemplary police force to find the culprit in the end. The mystery of the letters continues to captivate the nation, in which every household has an opinion on whether Miss Rose Gooding is innocent or guilty.
Hello, Thea. Sorry, I'm terrible at Zoom. Let me press that button. That's better. Are you well?
I'm very well, thank you. Don't worry at all.
Properly professional start.
Properly professional start. Love it.
I get to do the interview for the official Studio Canal podcast, so I'm going to temporarily be a grown-up. Can I ask you the boring question first of what Wicked Little Letters is and how it came to you?
So Wicked Little Letters is a movie based on a true story about a woman in 1920 Littlehampton, England, tiny little south coast town. A woman starts to receive some poison pen letters. And the woman receiving the letters is Edith Swan, played by Olivia Colman. She and her family and then the wider community assume immediately that it must be her neighbour, Rose Gooding, played by Jesse Buckley. And Rose gets thrown into jail for having written these letters. And there is a fabulous policewoman who, this is absolutely true, was the very first female police officer in the south of England. She feels that there's more to this story than meets the eye. And we as the audience basically follow her journey, trying to get to the bottom of if it wasn't Rose who did write these letters, or was it indeed Rose in the first place? And the community, if you like, gets bigger and bigger. So we encounter all these different characters as we go along on police officer Gladys Moss's journey. And at the same time, we learn about Edith and Rose and what their relationship was prior, and therefore why it is that Rose may have written these letters to Edith in the first place.
I think we know who it is.
Love thy neighbour, and I tried, but...
I'll get you in the ball sack!
She's heinous.
Edith, I didn't do it.
I believe you may be charging an innocent.
A woman police officer. Oh, look, flying pig.
I've got a daughter at home. Why would I risk it all?
You want fucking in the nose holes, you old beetle.
Beetle?
Right.
The very first time I read it, I had no idea that it was based on a true story. So I just thought it was a rollicking comedy. And I loved it. And I laughed out loud. And I thought, well, this doesn't happen very often. But there was something in the tone of it that I thought there is much more to this than just a comedy. There are some very, what feel like some quite vulnerable people within this movie who are kind of knocking on the door of some much bigger themes.
Yeah.
So I was very, very intrigued. I then met with Johnny Sweet, the writer, who told me that it was based on a true story. And at that point, I thought, okay. And things began to fall into place for me in terms of how this quintessentially ludicrous, very, very British story, the idea that it was real somehow made it much easier for me to understand the tone and to understand what the most important parts within the story were and what the questions were that I needed to get to the bottom of how best to tell it. And also, you know, how wide ranging, as I said, some of the themes that run through it, which are, you know, I think there are some really big, interesting conversations that can be had.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've enjoyed most in this process, since we've very gently started to let the film out into the wider world, is the reactions have been really interesting in that, by and large, most people seem to, they all enjoy and share the comedy on the same level. And with a kind of laugh out loud type of comedy, that's often the way it is. The comedy is very accessible. We've made it very easy to laugh at a certain moment and therefore to share it with somebody. But the sort of deeper, more complex themes are really there for people to respond to if it's something that they're interested in and if it's something that speaks to them. And what's been amazing is listening to older women, younger women, men too, but it is a very female-led, not only in the casting and actually, for what it's worth, behind the scenes. I've never worked on a film set that had more women running the floor.
Yeah.
So there are some big themes in there. But as I say, I'm very cautious to say this is a film about female emancipation or about what it is to be a woman in a very male workplace or what it is to live under a very sort of tyrannical father and a quite strict religious family, or what it is to be rejected from your family and have to start up a new life. You know, all of these are kind of big, serious things, and they're all there.
Yeah.
But the film is not weighty and heavy in that way. It's very accessible and light, and it's, you know, it's 96 minutes. It's not one of these big three-hour jobs.
God bless you for 96 minutes as well. God bless you.
It's a piece of entertainment, and that's really what we all responded to and aimed to deliver.
Dear Edith, you foxy ass old whore. Holy heavens.
No. Carry on.
Don't worry about me, Constable. I rise above it.
You really are a tricksy old fucker. You belong in hell, probably. And you're a sad, stinky bitch as well.
In the end, I think it's just jealousy.
So two things for you straight away from what you said there. Number one, huge congratulations for the most U certificate description of this film I've ever heard. When you consider just how potty mad the film is, and I should acknowledge that up front, I cannot believe that you managed to walk that line so perfectly.
Thank you very much. I worked very hard at that.
Well, certainly, I'm a really boring old movie nerd. And I remember going to watch, I'm the only person I'll ask you this today, I think, going to watch Back to the Future Part 2. When that came out.
Yeah.
And soon as Back to the Future Part 2 came out, I went and bought the making of book. And in the making of book, there was a line in there which has stuck with me. It sounds like the most basic thing through watching lots of films, where the director of that film, Robert Zemeckis, talked about how he didn't want people thinking how they'd made the film until they were on the way out. Now, you brought up tone with relation to Wicked Little Letters. It took me an hour after watching the film to realise what a tonal line you'd walked with it. That was my Back to the Future 2 moment with your film, which is a bit of a segue, but nonetheless.
I'm delighted with the comparison with Zemeckis. That's my highlight so far today.
But the tone, I appreciating listeners may not know you've got such an extensive backdrop in acclaimed theatre work, as well as your film work as well. That notwithstanding, the line that you have to walk between the comedic element of this and the drama underneath, I just don't know how you did it. So I thought, if I ever get to you and have a conversation, I will just ask you the most basic version of that, which is, how on earth do you manage it? How did that alter in the before, during and after, just getting that tone?
It was very, very, thank you for thinking so seriously about that, because that was absolutely for me, the biggest challenge right from the word go.
Yeah, yeah.
And I never felt alone in that journey. So whether it was Johnny, the writer, who completely understood that that was so important to me, or the producers who would consistently be by my side in terms of both the preparation, the shooting, and the editing of the movie.
Yeah.
Equally, my editor, Mel, was with me also on wanting always to keep in mind that ultimately the final film managed to hold that tightrope that you describe. But, you know, maybe the biggest thing that made it possible was that all of my actors understood that walking that line for me was the most important thing. And so what they allowed in the making of the film was for me to constantly ask them to give me a slightly varied performance so that I would always have in the edit, as much as I possibly could have, a slight variation of performance. So that if in a given scene that comes at a certain moment in the movie, I needed actually for a scene to have a light quality to it, given everything gone before it, that I had that, that I had the takes up my sleeve to be able to dial it up in a certain way. And I had this above all with Olivia, where she and I, in almost all of her scenes, I asked for very varied performances so that I had this, so that I was able to walk the line, particularly with her character, who I think is probably the most complex character, and the audience's relationship with her is quite complex in a way. Luckily, Olivia is so immediately lovable, whomever she's playing. She brings with her something that is so accessible, and you do side with her very naturally. But there are elements to her character in this movie that are not so likable.
Yeah.
And she was very, very brave in coming with me on giving me takes and a side to the performance of that particular character that dared for her to be less likable in a certain way versus being very easy to be with, so that I could constantly be able to walk back and forth over that line and make choices throughout the edit.
So how many takes, for instance, were you going for on those? And when you're talking about you're asking your actors to give you some variation, by the sounds of it, that's not we've just got 10 minutes at the end, go mad. You're talking about specific nuance, you know, just 5% here, 5% there.
Yeah. Again, particularly with Olivia, she has moments, whether it's a line or a performance throughout a whole scene, where she could be anywhere between light and dark, basically.
Yeah.
And there's some of the comedy could be really evil and cruel and mean, or very innocent and not thought through and just instinctive. There's a long way between those two places. She not only got it, but she's so wonderfully at ease with what she can do that she was just happy to totally come with me on that. And I mean, by the end, but actually it was very quickly, because that's the other thing about Olivia. She is unbelievably quick. She's so instinctive that we have shorthand, and I would just give her literally a one word that would mean, okay, can we go back to doing it like this from anywhere, as I say, from the innocent to the much less innocent version. And you know, she was with me. She got it. She understood it. And I was forever grateful when it came to the edit so that I had these different tones to draw on.
The father and I have been discussing a sermon I might give at St. Catherine's. It's very short, quite energising.
Well, you don't want me any more energised. Not unless you want a good bannocking.
A physical threat? It's like a trapdoor to hell opens up everywhere you tread.
I'm not actually evil, you know.
No, but you've got evil in you. No, it's not your fault. You were born with it, but I like you, Rose, and I'd like to bring you to the light, for Nancy's sake.
So one of my favourite pieces of movie trivia is that the film Step Brothers shot more film than Francis Ford Coppola shot for Apocalypse Now. It's my pod bore special, that is. But the argument there was that, it's Adam McKay, wasn't it, directed Step Brothers. His argument was that comedy requires more takes, comedy requires more goes. I'm just wondering if there was a little bit of that here compared to, say, something like Me Without You, One and Only Ivan, The Beautiful Game, obviously coming around the corner for you as well. But in comparison to the other films you made, did you find yourself doing more takes because of the comedic tone of it, or was it roughly the same?
No, I would say probably we did do more. Comedy is really, really, really hard. It's much harder to get right than heartfelt. I don't want to say tragedy, because that's so...
Yeah.
But, you know, emotional scenes, by and large, so long as you and the actors are in the same world, I feel very confident that we're going to get there. And a little bit of rehearsal, I know we're going to get there. Comedy is really tough. And I tell you, one of the things that I've learned the hard way with comedy is just because everybody in the room is killing themselves laughing at a particular performance,
yeah,
does not mean that when you get into the edit suite and all you've got is that little bit of film, if the lighting, the angle, all sorts of things, someone else in the scene is not quite doing what you need it to do, the comedy is lost immediately. So probably the most important thing in the entire making of this movie was the casting, not just of Olivia and Jesse, but the whole cast. I knew that to deliver this script, I had to have actors who understood the craft of comedy, so that if I'm going in for the 10th time asking them to do the same comedic line again, that they understand that that is not because they're not doing it right, but that there's another reason that is beyond their control that we need to do it. Or that maybe actually that wasn't very funny and we do need to do it again, and that's because of a certain delivery. And it takes real bravery and experience for actors to not lose their confidence, but to go, oh, yeah, no, you're right. That wasn't very funny. Let me do it again. That's huge. And not everybody, let me tell you, not everybody can do that.
Well, I may have mentioned to you that I'm a boring old nerd. And so one of my other boring old nerd things I did is I went through your ensemble cast and found that the vast majority of them had extensive experience on stage. I wondered if that was deliberate in terms of the way you were looking for the performance and the performers you were looking for. Now, I wonder if I can frame that through Anjana Vartan, who's someone I particularly want to talk to you about. The last time I'd heard of it, she's winning an Olivier Award. And I think her performance in this was really surprising, really fresh, really surprising. And I just wonder if you can just expand just on the casting just a little bit.
So you're absolutely right. And you may have noticed that some of them I have worked with before. Tahidi, for example, who plays the chief police officer, he is someone I worked with maybe 20 years ago on stage in the theatre world. In fact, it wasn't even my show. I was an assistant on a show, but we travelled the world together and we got to know each other really well. So I know just how funny Paul is. And when I read this, he was one of the first people I thought of, because I just thought, I know that he will understand the tone of the comedy and why it's funny, how it is that you have to understand, again, the craft of comedy if you're going to give a performance in which people laugh at you. Hugh Skinner is exactly the same.
Yeah,
he understands that totally. They happen to be people that I have either worked with or auditioned or know from the theatre world. And you're absolutely right. There is a degree of reliability for me that comes with actors who I know have had to do it live on stage with an audience right there, because there is no quicker way to learn your craft as an actor than having a live audience. Johnny Sweet is a stand-up. He started off in stand-up comedy. So boy, does he know how much it hurts and how hard it is to get those laughs and how hard you have to work to get there. And no wonder, therefore, his script is as funny as it is, because he's learned that the hard way. Anjana is a prime example. So she has just won her Olivier Award for Streetcar Named Desire. You know, it's a totally different tonal piece to this. And one interesting thing about Anj is I didn't know her before this. I knew her work, but I only knew her work from TV. And again, it was comedy. So when we thought of her, I thought, oh my God, I bet she gets this. What I didn't understand, because of course I wouldn't have known this until I met with her. Even when we first met, she'd done so much thinking about who this woman was and how important it is when you represent a real life person.
Yeah.
But also she knows that she's, if anything, she's almost like the straight woman within this slightly farcical film. And to play the straight woman is just as hard as playing the light relief. And again, I don't think without her theatre background, she would have known that so as well as she does. And so again, she completely understood the tonal shifts that I was going to have to achieve in this movie, given the subject matter and given the way it was written.
What?
Are you busy?
I'm just boiling an egg.
Great, come on then.
What? No, as in, yes, I'm busy. I'm boiling an egg.
Hurry up. We've had an idea.
I found a lovely interview with you from the British Theatre Guide all the way back in 2003, where it described you as the young person selling tickets and walking almost the whole returns queue into the theatre. And then it turned out you actually were the artistic director, but you were so over all parts of it. Now, you've talked there about Johnny Sweet, for instance, and you've talked about the closeness and the tightness of the crew. How do you, as a human being, run your sets? Do you run it in the same way that you were working at theatre? Because, I mean, from the outside looking in, I think this is really important, that film sets can sometimes be seen as quite hostile. I get completely the opposite impression of you.
I'm a nightmare.
Excellent. Excellent. Very sweary.
Yeah.
Trashing the place.
I fire people left, right and centre.
Is that right? I'm amazed I've made it this far.
I mean, for me, I just don't buy into the hairdryer philosophy.
Yeah.
That's not me. I want people to feel comfortable and I want everybody to know that nobody is more important than anybody else on the set. It just doesn't work like that. We have to work at a team, as a team. And when you're shooting, in particular, the hours are punishing. The weather can be incredibly difficult. You often have to move. You're always under time pressure. You know, it's really hard. It's really, really hard work. And it doesn't help in some ways that everyone always thinks it's really glamorous, and it really isn't glamorous. It can be brutal. And then the minute somebody isn't either feeling very well or somebody's had a loss of confidence or, you know, again, all sorts of things, that I take it as my responsibility that I want people to be proud of their work. I want them to want to be there. I want them to give the best that they can, whether that's the leading lady or the runner.
Yeah.
It will make the environment a better place to be. That's my philosophy. And that's funny because I'd forgotten that interview and I'd forgotten that that was revealed. But that is me.
I love that. I'm going to get to your two leads just at the end of this. But I just wanted to pick one of the people from below the line who might not get talked about. You mentioned her just before, your editor, Melanie Oliver. And the process I've heard with regards editing comedy is it really requires a tightness between the editor and the director, even more so in some cases, I am told, I'm the outside looking in, where a single beat can just make a huge difference to how a laugh works, right down to a single frame, I've been told. Can you just tell me just a little bit about the relationship between the two of you and also the importance in that editing room of hitting the 96 minutes, for which obviously we're going to give you huge prizes and numerous thanks.
All of that is true about comedy. And we literally sat together and added a frame here, taken away a frame there in order to try and hit the beat in the right way. I had never worked with Mel before. I had tried to on several occasions, but she was never available and the dates never fit. So I was really, really delighted. She came in and met Graham Broadbent, the producer, and I, having read the script. And again, everything she said about the script completely chimed in with how I felt about it. She, boy, did she understand the tonal shifts and how to, the looking after that tonal tightrope was going to be the biggest challenge.
Yeah,
I knew from our first meeting that we were going to be brothers in arms or singing from the same hymn sheet, however you want to describe it. I knew we were going to sit very comfortably in the same boat together. What's interesting with an editor is the first time you work with them, the first part of your relationship is completely remote often. So she was in London receiving every day all of our rushes, and I would be out on set, and we spoke every day. She would give me feedback on the day before's filming. But what's interesting is that you have to go through this whole process not sitting together at all to begin with. And it's so important that you feel as a director that you've got your back is being looked after, so that there is somebody who is looking at every single thing that you're shooting. And the next day is ringing you saying you need to be careful because X is happening, or you haven't got Y, or simply saying, oh, my God, yesterday's scenes were brilliant. So-and-so was fantastic. I'm really happy. And you walk into your next day thinking, well, brilliant. If Mel's happy, then I'm happy. As I say, they also have to be brave enough to say to you, I'm not quite sure that actually worked, or the sun is so bright in that you're going to have to go back and do it again without it, or, you know, whatever it may be. you're thrust into a really, really close, intimate relationship where you just have to be brave with each other. Then you get into the edit. And one of the things that we fell quite naturally into rhythmically, which is, I think, partly why it worked so well with us, I would sometimes explain what I wanted and what I felt was the most important thing to achieve in a certain scene, whether it was a performance, whether it was a line sometimes, whether it was using a particular take from an angle, whatever it was that for me was the most important thing. And I would give her that information and then I would leave her to it. She'd give me a day or an hour or whatever it was that she needed to then do the work by herself with that note in mind. Then I would come back and watch it and have a reaction. And rather than sit and watch her doing the surgery, if you like, at which point I would know exactly where all the stitching was because I'd seen her do it. If I don't watch that, it gives me a little bit of distance and I can react much better and give her much better feedback. Until you get to the stage where you've basically got it, it's just that rhythmically there's something that is a little bit off, and that's when you get into the minutiae of a frame here and a frame there.
Yeah.
The most important thing about comedy, every single time, it's your ear. Your ear will tell you what the rhythm, whether the rhythm is right or wrong. What's difficult is watching it time and time again, either on your own or with your editor. It's just the two of you. And it's only really an audience that will tell you whether it's timing is right or wrong. But your ear is your biggest ally.
Oi! You daft old fucking slippery old fucking dodger.
Why would I send a letter when I can just say it?
I'd probably say that you look like fucking Queen Victoria shoved a fucking nettle up her fucking pussy. I don't know.
You stink of coming shit and the cakes you make look like they've fallen out some fucking sheep's fucking arsehole.
Better.
I have 30 seconds of your time left. If you can just give me one line about Olivia and Jesse, I come to them now. Olivia and Jesse, apart, really special. Together, absolutely pivotal. Can you just give me just a very brief what it was like when they were together and you knew it was working?
They are the best of the best.
Love it.
And their respect for each other is palpable. And their generosity, but also their openness and their want to keep learning, whether it's from each other or from anybody on set that day. They're a masterclass in humanity, to be honest, and they gave each other even more confidence than they seem to have when they're on their own. And that is a really beautiful way to start an atmosphere on set. So they led the way with professionalism and just beautiful way to behave.
Wonderful. Thea Sharrock, it's been an absolute delight talking to you. Thank you for joining us on the Studio Canal Presents podcast.
Thank you so much.
I like you, Rose.
I hate her! Uh-huh.
You don't like the idea of me leaving this house, do you?
I'm going to lose her.
We're not standing for it.
I've had one now.
Everyone is going to know.
Wicked Little Letters is in UK cinemas from 23rd of February 2024. Now it's time for our regular news update from the world of Studio Canal.
Did you ever see
the film Mother's Instinct is one we've teased before on this podcast, and I'm delighted to confirm that its UK cinema release date is 27th of March 2024.
When Theo was born, I couldn't even hold him. I was afraid I was going to drop him.
I'm a terrible mother.
You're a wonderful mother.
Starring Jessica Chastain and Anne Hathaway, the film is directed by Benoit Delhomme, and it's a psychological thriller about two housewives in the 1960s whose friendship falls apart after a tragic event.
Max? Max, get down. It's not safe. Max! Celine! Alice?
Also, on 29th of March, one of the absolute favourites of the Ealing Studios catalogue is getting a re-release in UK cinemas. 1951's The Lavender Hill Mob has enjoyed a 4K restoration, and you'll be able to see the much-loved comedy caper on the big screen. Then, it's also going to be released on 4K Ultra HD Blu-ray disc for the first time later this year. will be coming to the world of Ealing in a future episode of Studio Canal Presents. Heading to the vintage classics line of DVD and Blu-rays is the 1959 kitchen sink drama Room at the Top. The Oscar-winning film stars Laurence Harvey and Simone Signoret, and it's credited with helping pave the way for the British new wave of cinema.
We pride ourselves on being civilised here in Wanley.
Dufton's not much of a place, but we're not exactly savages there, you know, Mr. Hoyley.
You think not?
Directed by Jack Clayton in his feature debut, the film's new disc release hits on the 11th of March, 2024.
From primary school to sell-out concerts. It's going to happen one of these days. Voice like yours, got to.
There's more news on the film telling the story of music legend Amy Winehouse. Back to Black stars Marissa Abella as Winehouse, Sam Taylor-Johnson directs, and it's now been revealed that the score for Back to Black is being written by Nick Cave and Warren Ellis. They don't venture into film scoring very often, and when they do, it tends to be really very special. Just dig out the scores for films such as The Assassination of Jesse James by the coward Robert Ford, or The Proposition for evidence of that. Back to Black is in UK cinemas on Friday, the 12th of April, 2024.
I don't write songs to be famous. I write songs because I've got to make something good out of something bad.
I'll be back soon with the next episode of Studio Canal Presents. Until the next time, to get all the news on Studio Canal films as it happens, and to find out more about the ITVX, Apple TV and Prime Video channels, you can visit www.studiocanal.co.uk or follow Studio Canal at Studio Canal UK on X, Instagram and TikTok. For now, I'm off to practice my swearing ahead of a cheeky cinema trip to see Wicked Little Letters. Ta-ta for now.